Thanks for being with us, everyone. My name is George Knapp. I'm in for my friend and colleague, George Norrie, who asked me to fill in so he can have a night off, and I'm glad to do it. We're about to go to open lines. We can talk about anything on your mind at all. I don't claim to be an expert on any of it, but I'll give it a shot. One of the things I'd like to talk about at some point, if it's okay with you, I sort of hinted about it at the beginning of the program, and that's the concept of disclosure. And I'm not don't mean should we have disclosure about UFOs, paranormal stuff, whatever. Of course, I think everyone listening to this program thinks we should have more information, that we're entitled to it. I'm talking about the act of disclosure, whether we're ready for it. I mean, even gentle disclosure, in my opinion, could cause significant disruptions and problems. I think a lot of people would freak out. There's no mechanism for handling it in our government, and it's the kind of thing I think we need to start talking about. We'll do that, if that's what's on your mind, when we come back and open up the lines on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Knapp. Just talking a minute ago, this interest in disclosure stems from a conversation I had a couple of days ago with a friend of mine named Bob Bigelow. Now, a lot of you folks might know that name. He's a Las Vegas businessman. He founded something a few years ago called the National Institute for Discovery Science, had a world-class team of scientists traveling around the country investigating cattle mutilations, UFO sightings, Skinwalker Ranch, all kinds of things. He's done a lot, put a lot of money into the kinds of research that folks who listen to this program are interested in. Also has his own aerospace company, and he's sort of been kicking around the idea of, shouldn't we be ready for disclosure? I mean, you look at the UFO phenomenon, it's been around for a long time, and scientists who criticize it are accurate in this one sense, in that we can't predict where and when it's going to happen. But it certainly is repeatable in a sense. It pops up. And it seems like whoever these visitors are, wherever they're from, they're the ones who call the shots. They appear when and where they want to. It's been going on for 65 years that we know of in the modern UFO era, probably a lot longer than that. And Bigelow is just kind of postulating what would happen if there really was confirmed activity, if UFOs did literally land on the White House lawn 3 days in a row or something like that, something undeniable. Would we be ready for it? Well, a lot of us would. A lot of Coast to Coast listeners certainly would, but a lot of folks wouldn't. They'd be calling Congress, they'd be calling the fire department, the police, wanting to know what the heck to do. Is there a threat? A lot of them probably wouldn't go to work. A lot would go to church. It would have even a gentle sort of an introduction of this other intelligence, I think, would have profound effects. So maybe that's something we need to talk about on this program, not necessarily tonight, but down the road, is what steps can be made to get ready for disclosure if we're ever going to have it. Anyway, that's just what's been on my mind. We're going to go east of the Rockies. Dave in Pennsylvania, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning, George. How are you out there?
Okay.
Never, never land. listen, you know, I've had some experience with UFOs in my life, and, you know, I do think there is disclosure necessary, but, you know, to me, it's like people really don't open their mind enough and study and look and find out more reports on it and have more of an open mind on it.
Well, I can't argue. I can't argue with you. I think that's not true in general for listeners of this program. I mean, they tune in because they are interested in it. But as a reporter, I can tell you, I run into all kinds of people. Mostly it's people in my line of work who give me grief about it for having an interest in it.
Well, that's because they don't have an open mind, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd just like to tell you a couple of experiences I had.
Okay.
You know, from childhood. You know, I lived in an area where we used to be able to go into the woods, you know. Nobody would bother us, you know, even at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I mean, it was a neighborhood that, you know, you could do mostly anything, you know, without hurting anybody, you know. I mean, if you did something wrong, the police would be there. But, you know, we used to hop trains in our backyard because they were slow, and we'd take them down to a place called the Sand Pit. And beyond that is a an area, what they call 8th Street in West Wyoming. And when I was a kid, we were walking down the tracks one day, about four of us, and we happened to fall upon this field off to the right-hand side, about, say, 20 yards in. We noticed this burnt spot. So we happened to take a walk in there, and we found this big 20-yard circle of just burnt out perfect. And we were just like astonished. You know, you're 10, 11 years old. You're thinking, yeah, have you heard about UFOs? I mean, during the 70s, it was a little more prominent in my eyes then. But, you know, I happened to see this with my friends, and all of a sudden, about 5 minutes later, the police came down, and they started kicking us out of there. But when I really looked at it and I checked it out, it was all, like, bent at one direction, and it was, like, pure black. I picked it up, and it was, it didn't fall apart, you know, like you think it would be, you know, just ash, but it wasn't. It was pretty neat.
Don't suppose you saved any of that, did you? Put it in a bag? Put
it
in a
plastic bag? No, I know where the area is, and it's all it is just weeded and just non-developed.
I'll tell you, Dave.
I haven't went back there in such a while, and I've been thinking about it for, like, the past year. But I've had some medical problems that, you know, I can't really walk that well at this time. But I really want to get back down there. I know there may be something there. But it was so weird how it happened, you know. Please kick this out. We stood on the tracks a little bit and just watched. But, you know, as a kid, we just went on with our lives, you know.
Well, you know, we had a guy named Ted Phillips on the program about a month ago, and he specializes in what they call landing site trace cases, where he goes out, people see UFOs. He goes and collects physical evidence at sites where something set down. A lot of those cases involved burned vegetation, and he takes samples and analyzes them. Some of them are something similar to, like, crop circles. I think they used to be called saucer nests in the old days. He's got a fabulous collection of data and evidence, the kinds of things that scientists should look at but don't. I would suggest, Dave, if you feel up to it sometime, you should go back down there, because as Ted has reported, in a lot of these kinds of incidents, nothing grows at these sites for many, many years, and maybe you'd still find something. Are you still there?
I went back there. It's so weird I lived here all my life, and, you know, I've been a lot of places in the United States, but I never left my home, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Is there somewhere where I could reach this gentleman at?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. You have to call us. Send me an email offline, and I'll get an email contact for you. His name is Ted Phillips. He's been around in the UFO field for a long time. He was a contact, colleague of J. Allen Hynek years ago. If you can't find him with a Google search, you send me an email, and I'll find it for you. Thanks for the call, Dave. We're going to go to our wild card line, Felipe in La Puente, California. Good morning, Felipe.
Hello, George.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. This is Felipe from La Puente, California.
What's on your mind?
Actually, I'm listening to you from KFI 640. I was wondering, I was listening to the other George interviewing Stanton Friedman
right,
a couple days ago. And I just remembered something from like 10 years ago that he did a commentary for a video of an alien abduction that happened to a family while in Thanksgiving. And later ended up being a hoax. Well, being touted as being a hoax. And I'm wondering if he now realizes that, if that's a fake now, or if he's still thinking that it was real.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Stanton is not here. I interviewed Stanton last Sunday, so I don't remember getting into this. In fact, we barely touched on the abduction research. Stanton has recently written a book about the Betty and Barney Hill case, probably the most famous abduction case of all. I don't recall him ever appearing on a video in which he talked about some Thanksgiving abduction, or in which he vouched for it and it turned out not to be true or a hoax. He's a pretty careful researcher. Are you sure it was Stanton Friedman?
Yeah, it was definitely Stanton Friedman. It was also Whitley Strieber was also on it, too.
Well, Whitley has done a lot of interesting work in that area and has had a lot of personal experiences. I'm sorry, I don't, that this case, the Thanksgiving thing, just doesn't ring a bell. Sorry, I can't help you. We're going to go to Scott in Los Angeles, also on a wild card line. Scott, good morning.
Hi, George, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had noticed on the website you have a guest coming on tomorrow, and unfortunately I will be unavailable to call in. I'd really like to speak with the author. I followed the link and noticed that it also offers a connected book by an author by the name of Lon Milo Duquette on Enochian magic, similar subject in the realm of esoteric studies. Now, what's odd to for me is the fact that a DVD on the same subject that has been on sale for some time, that is narrated by Duquette, is not even mentioned. And when it was mentioned several years before in a follow-up to Duquette, Norrie was extremely interested in reviewing this and haven't heard anything about it since.
Scott, I wish I could answer your question, but I'm sort of in the same boat I was in with Felipe there. Felipe had a question for Stanton Friedman, and you've got one for George Norrie, and I can't help you with either one. That's why I'm going to Richard in Fresno, California. Good morning, Richard. Have you got a question or something you want to talk about with me?
Yes, George. I wanted to relate a story to you about an experience that was reportedly happened to a member of my family. My grandfather's uncle. This was it relates to your previous guest.
Okay.
It's about religious paradigms versus spiritual truth.
Okay. Shoot.
And what happened? My grandfather, he was raised by his uncle Atwin Stockham, who is the chief of the tribe, a tribe which I'm a member of up in Washington State, called the Cowlitz tribe, and he was also the spiritual leader of the tribe. He was a high priest in a religion called the Indian Shaker religion.
Hey, Richard, something weird's going on with your phone. Are you banging it on something, or is it tapped?
No, it may have a little loose connection. I'll try to keep it real still.
Okay.
My grandfather's uncle died around 1900, a little bit after that, at the age of 102. But he was, so loved by the Indian people, the Cowlitz people, the tribe that I'm a member of. It's been reported in the Seattle Times, March 9th, 1959, on page A8. There's a story by Harold Otho Stone, The Resurrection of Chief Atwin. And what happened, according to the story, this beloved chief died at the age of 102, but there was a ceremony which was conducted, which my great-grandfather, I.L. Wahawa, was present. He was also a priest in this religion. And they had this big ceremony described in pretty good detail in the article. And when it was all over, he came back to life, and he lived another 5 years.
Well, that's a pretty interesting case. I mean, how's that documented?
It was just told by a man who was present at the ceremony by the author of the article, Harold Otho Stone. He was the only white man invited to the ceremony. He was a friend of the Indian people.
So he wrote it down in a book or something?
In the Seattle Times.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd sure like to see that article sometime. Maybe you can make a copy of it and then send it to Coast, and we'll put it on the website. Thanks for the call. We're going to go west of the Rockies, Riley, in one of the most beautiful places in the world, and you're killing me just for being there, Maui.
Hi, George.
Hey, good morning.
Aloha, how are you?
Okay.
Exciting times, I think.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are afraid, and I think it's exciting. I think, your last guests were really interesting. I wasn't ever really deep in the Da Vinci Code, but I think now I will be. a couple of things, food for thought. It's like looking at today versus 2,000 years ago. There's a place in the Bible, and I cannot quote where or who wrote it, but it talks about that we're now looking through a glass darkly, and that later on we will see clearly. So it's sort of like we're at the time when things are starting to get cleared up,
Well, I sure hope you're right, Riley. You look around, and it sure looks dark. We're looking through the glass darkly now, I know. You look at fuel prices, and people are talking about $7 a gallon gas by the end of the year, and
right.
Food prices are going up, and people are losing their homes, and tensions all over the world, and you got crazy people with nukes and crazier people that want to get nukes, and it sure looks dark right now, and I hope that you're right, that there's light at the end of this tunnel.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of, that's just the doings of mankind,
You mean spiritually or something?
Well, spiritually, I think it's going to be a good thing. I really do. I mean, there's some scary things that people talk about, but I take things with a grain of salt, and I listen to a lot of people talking, and I try to stay focused and keep my mind open, like the gentleman just said. And I agree with what the American Indian people, you know, the native endemic peoples of the world really have some kind of connection, because, like in Hawaii, the Hawaiians are really connected spiritually to the land. And to think that maybe sometime in the past, spiritual entities, ETs, if you like, might have found that quite interesting.
I wonder this. Do you think that it's easier to be optimistic about the future when you live in a place like Maui? And I'm not being a smart butt with that. But every time I've been there, and I used to go every year, I mean, your cares sort of wash away, don't they?
Yeah, well, my family's been here for six generations. I bought a place in Colorado. I'm moving. And if you want, you can buy this place on the Hana Coast if you want. We're coming up for sale.
Send me a deal. Okay.
Yeah, it would be nice. But here's some food for thought. You know, I was like looking at the Bible and stuff. I talked to George Norrie a little bit about this. I even wrote a song, and I'm going to send it to George one day. And it's about Adam and Eve, you know. And Eve was made alone. It's maybe 600,000 men. And, you know, now they needed a mate, so God puts them to sleep, or E.T., whatever you want to think God is. And he says, well, put Adam to sleep and took his rib and made Eve. All he had to do was make a Y chromosome. So it's like, that's cloning. To me, that's, when looking back, now I'm starting to see clearly as to, you know, if you're trying to teach people of the time back then, how are you going to tell them that God cloned Eve? You know what I mean? And it might sound far-fetched, but in today's time, I don't think it is. And then another thing that he talked about, he said that he told the people that in his father's house, there are many mansions. Well, how are you going to tell people that in my father's house is made up of many dimensions, you know?
Dimensions or mansions, did you say?
Well, he told the people of the time that in my father's house, there are many mansions. And that
could be dimensions, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking that that's what he was really meaning, because how was he to explain to them at that time that it's a dimensional place, you know what I'm saying?
Good thinking. Good thoughts, Riley. I appreciate it. Send us your song sometime, and aloha. We're going to go to our Mike in Livermore, Northern California. Are you there?
Here,
on our guest line?
Yes, I'm here, George. How you doing?
Good morning. How you doing? We might not finish with you before the break, but we'll hold on to you. So what's on your mind?
Oh, great. Your show's great tonight.
Thanks.
Thoroughly enjoying it. A rough start there with the open line. Everybody wants to ask somebody else a question. I'm going to answer your question. I don't think we're ready for it. Disclosure.
Or why not?
It actually doesn't really matter, because when it happens, the people who are going to spin it are the media. And,
well, yeah.
You know, we're pretty much proving that we're sheeple. We're going to follow what the media tells us to do. So if the government, the media, anybody's going to spin the contact any way they want it to be.
Well, I agree with you that spin is possible, and I've seen it in my own life and in my own work in television and print for a long time. But I think the scenario I was presenting is something that's undeniable. The kind of event that would be irrefutable proof that everyone could see with their own eyes, I think there are people in the media that would cover it, honestly. I think there would be live coverage if they could get it. They'd put it out there. And I think, as I mentioned, I think the folks, whoever they are or wherever they're from or whatever the intelligence is that calls the shots on this, could arrange it in a way that they know it's going to get out. Stick around for a minute, Mike. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with your questions and comments and other open line calls as well. I'm George Knapp on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Mike from Livermore in Northern California, pretty little town. I grew up, went to high school not far from there. But Livermore is home to one of the great national labs, one of the greatest labs in the world, and is home to a heck of a lot of secrets. Mike just gave me his opinion that we're not ready for disclosure, his reason being that he doesn't trust the media to report the story straight. Let me ask you, Mike. If the media were honest in reporting irrefutable proof of some other intelligence, call them ETs, whatever, and the story came out, do you then believe the general public is ready to hear it?
Well, I don't know if it's so much a matter of ready to hear it or willing to listen to it. I think so many people are caught up in their own little lives and possessing material things and getting on with it that they would look at it as, oh, it's just another thing. How's it going to affect me? But a question to you is, would be, do you believe it's the governments of the world that are holding back us getting this information, or the ETs themselves?
Well, I think it's both. I think the government is certainly withholding information. That can be proven demonstrably. But it's as Whitley Strieber once said in an interview with me, and I think he even wrote it in one of his books, is that the visitors are the true architects of the secrecy. And as I mentioned a little bit ago, they decide when and where they're going to be seen, where they appear, who gets to see them. They call these shots. A lot of folks like Bob Bigelow consider it sort of a display, a performance, slowly, gradually making their presence known for an agenda that we can't quite figure out. So, I think it's both. I think our government probably knows a lot more than we do, but I'm not sure it knows all of it. There's also the possibility, and we can talk about that after this break, that the possibility of maybe the real ultimate truth is truly disturbing, not a gentle disclosure, but something that really would rock us right to our socks. And in that case, I really am not sure that we're ready. Mike, thanks for the call. We're taking a break. We'll come back with more of your open line questions right after this. All right, everyone, we're back with Coast to Coast. My name is George Knapp, in tonight for George Norrie, and we're going to the lines to see what's on your mind. Going to go to a hometown girl here, Kathleen, here in Las Vegas. What's on your mind?
Hi, George. The other George.
How's it going?
Really good. You know, I hear a lot of talk about the darkness of our times, but, you know, really, I just feel that that's a projection, because what if this is a time when we can all jump out and create new inventions? After all, they're doing water for gas. I mean, there's all sorts of great fun things that can happen from this time, and the darkness is really just a projection. It's just really only our feelings of fear when we think about aliens and the possibility of no gas and all the other problems that are going on in the world.
Well, I can't disagree with you, and I hope you're right. You know, you look at the energy situation, and it certainly would seem like this would be a time to come up with alternatives to oil and gas when you look at the prices and what it's doing to the cost of everything, including food and things of that sort. I really hope you're right.
And new kinds of housing. I mean, look at the people in Oklahoma and in the Hurricane Alley that, you know, they just keep building the same houses. And no offense to them, I feel bad for them. But, you know, there are other types of housing possibly that they could build if they want to live there. And I just think that it's a really exciting time, and the world, the universe, the gods are showing us that, hey, we just need to look at this in a different way and jump in and start figuring out what we can do about the problems that we have.
Well, thank you for the call, Kathleen. I think I'm sort of a glass half empty kind of a guy, because in my line of work, my everyday job as a TV reporter, I see some people in very bad straits, and I'm sure that they would like to believe there's light at the end of the tunnel, and could certainly use a dose of your happy optimism, but it's a struggle every day, going to work, making ends meet, putting food on the table, and it's probably going to be that way for a lot of people for a long time. That said, sure hope you're right about this stuff. Wildcard line, Jason in Florida. Good morning.
First, I want to say it's been a great start to the show. But what I wanted to say was that if definite proof was shown to humanity that aliens existed, we would surely have growing pains, but I still believe with total open information that we would just deal, and maybe it could even unite us, a part of maybe evolving, or just, I just think that we would, you know, the growing pains could be severe, but I still think that it would be a positive thing, because I think that it could, you know, I believe in the strength of us, and I think that, you know, we would just, you know, deal with the situation.
Well, I think your point is well taken, that humans are incredibly resilient. We've dealt with some tough stuff in the past, and that we would undoubtedly be able to cope with this on some level. It really boils down to what is disclosed. If disclosure happens, what is it? And we don't know. I mean, you know, we've been studying this stuff for a long time. I had Stan Friedman on last Sunday, as I mentioned, and although we know a lot more, we've got a lot more cases and experiences to analyze, we really don't know a whole heck of a lot about the really big questions: who they are, where they're from, why they're here, what their interest is in us. And so that leaves a whole range of possibilities open. Disclosure of what? I mean, maybe it's benign, maybe it's nice. Even something gentle, I think, would have pretty significant repercussions, and that we need to figure out a way to get ready for them. But what if it's not nice? What if it's something really disturbing? What if we learn that we are property? That what if we learn that they are from somewhere and they've been harvesting us for whatever? I've heard the phrase a couple of times over the years about harvesting us for souls. What if they have been abducting people and taking them somewhere for slave labor, and there's nothing we can do about it, or we're food, or something of that sort? What if we learn that they're interdimensionals, that they are like super beings? They see everything we do. They can read our thoughts. They see us. They can enter our world. We can't enter theirs. That kind of stuff would be pretty disturbing to a heck of a lot of people, including me. Don't you agree?
Would you still believe in total open information and just saying that that would be better if it's true and we're going to find out eventually?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm a reporter. I'm a journalist. The First Amendment is my religion. It's my religion. It's my profession. It's my obsession. And I believe in disclosure. And as a reporter, if I get information, it's my job to report it. But I'll tell you, after being in the field of the UFO research and talking with a lot of the most experienced researchers over the years, there are a lot of them who will confide in quiet moments that they've had to rethink it. They've had to think, what if it's a really unpleasant truth? Would you opt for total disclosure? My pat answer would be yes. That's my job. That's the job of this program, is to get this information out. So it would have to be something pretty terrible to convince me that it's not a story that could be told. And I've imagined a variety of responses, but I still believe it's got to come out. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it. We're going to go to Phil in Wyoming. Good morning, Phil.
Well, I lied to you. I'm not in Wyoming anymore. I'm in Colorado.
Okay. Oh, you've been driving.
Oh, I'm a truck driver, yeah.
All right. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I guess I have a resentment toward non-disclosure because I grew up in parochial school, and only special people knew, got to know special things, and the government treats us like that. Only special people get to know special things, and I don't think we're being respected as human beings if we're not told the truth. I mean, it's really hard for the everyday person to tell the truth, but if we practice it on, you know, things like this, how hard is it going to be for us to evolve into that kind of a person?
Well,
I think there's a lot of untruth out there, and no, everybody's got a lot of apathy.
Well, I can't argue with you on that point. I'm not arguing for non-disclosure or withholding information by any means. I think it should come out, and we got to get prepared for it because it's going to happen eventually. I just was speculating about what if, you know, what if it was something really bad. And I agree with you on the special people who have special access. You know, that we have some very legitimate national security programs at a place called Area 51 out here that need to be conducted in secrecy for the good of our country and the safety of our citizens. However, secrecy has been taken so far in our country, so many millions and tens of millions of documents locked up for 50 or 60 years with no plausible reason to do it. The idea that there are folks in our government, in our military, in our think tanks and major institutions and companies that know so much more about the UFO mystery, about the visitors, whatever the heck is going on, because clearly something is going on, it ticks me off as a person, as a reporter, as an American, that the assumption is made that they can handle it and we can't. Well, I don't believe that. If they can handle it, we can handle it. But I still hold out that, but maybe, just maybe, there's a legitimate reason for at least slowing down the release of the information. That's what I meant.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, and I agree. There's certain things that, you know, until they need to be implemented, you know, it's not common knowledge to everybody. But it's like that church business you were talking about in the prior segment. You know, there's a lot of control on not letting people know something or letting them know only certain things and saying, well, if you cross this line, you ain't going to be able to. And that just bugs the, I can't say it.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
I do. You know what bugs me more, Phil, is them lying to us, lying
exactly.
about it, you know.
In 2,000 years of a perpetuated lie, I'm sorry, I knew when I was a small kid that some of the stuff that I was being taught, my heart told me, that can't be right. It's just not right. Who came up with that?
Well, you know, there are a variety of control mechanisms that are used to keep folks in line, to keep the factories churning and consumers consuming and things of that sort. And, you know, it seems like a cliche to say power to the people, but that's true. And the source of power is information. You know, that like in my line of work, that's our job, is to get information to people. This is a democracy. It's not a, you know, it's not a right. It's a responsibility. We're supposed to be involved, and to get involved, we need information, and there can't be lies and non-disclosure, and especially on something as important as this. Thanks for your call, Phil. We're going to go to east of the Rockies, Dale in Tallahassee. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, George. How you doing?
Okay.
Yes, I thank the Most High Spirit for allowing me to talk to you at this very moment in time. And in the quest for truth, again, I'm sure you have heard these phrases, my people are destroyed from lack of knowledge, and you should know the truth, and the truth should make you free.
Sure, so, I know that one.
And any time that knowledge is being brought forth, there is disclosure. The truth seekers, they will be rewarded, him that seeks him diligently. They will be given revelations. It would clear their mind. It would lead them into more peace. But the questions that I want to, I mean, some points that I want to bring forth to your audience is again this disclosure and all this information goes back into belief and to first it's in the quest to control the minds of the thinkings of man. As far as the Holy Scriptures, when you seek Emmanuel, Aramaically called Yeshua, you will not be led to Jesus. You will not be led to the teachings of the Greeks when they said that his name should be called Jesus. You will be seeking, again, Emmanuel. And once you seek Emmanuel, you would be led to Melchizedek, the order that Yeshua was made a priest after the order of Melchizedek. Again, that's when you will be led to the knowledge of the chakras of the Spirit of God that's within all mankind, not within all matter, whether it be mankind, animals, the whole gamut of energy. I mean, energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It only changed forms. Before there was what we call the known universe, there was light. There was male, which is short for melanic, which means black, a very dark, chi, which means spirit, life force, energy, a god, dark conscious energy. This, once you understand what that is, the knowledge of that, that's when you will be led into finding the truth of God within yourself.
Okay, Dale, I'll tell you what, you're getting a little deep into the scripture. I like where you're coming from, though. You know, whatever the name is, we're all, we might be on different paths, but maybe all heading in the same direction. Thanks for your call. We're going to go to Bert in San Leandro, California on a wild card line. Good morning, Bert.
Yes, hi, George.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that these satellite weapons that that we possess, they're really an enlarged version of the electron microscope, they're able to, you know, read information off of a dime. These electromagnetic weapons that are embedded into these satellites that are able to torture an individual, they are able to lock on, they have satellite tracking capabilities, and they're able to, you know, hear conversations and torture an individual from a distance. They basically use...
I know who you are. You've been sending me emails about satellite control of the mind and things of that sort, right?
Exactly, exactly. They use essentially Tesla technology where they direct two lasers of different polarities, and where the lasers intercept, it essentially causes a spark.
And what's the proof for this, Bert? What proof do you have for this?
Well, basically this... They've been using these weapons to torture women into performing sex acts and to keep people from whistleblowing. They've used these weapons on legislative branch members, on media folks. They've used these weapons for a number of years. And basically, my wife was raped by a federal agent, and I actually reported it to the local FBI office in San Francisco. And after that happened, I was tortured, and there was an effort to obstruct justice to prevent me from coming forward.
Whoa, slow down here. Who tortured you?
The individual that that raped my wife.
Same guy who raped your wife tortured you. Did you report it to the police?
Well, I reported it to the FBI. I met with six different duty agents, and then I visited the U.S. Attorney's Office in Oakland. I met with Kim Briggs three times, but there was a bit of a challenge because they have a conflict of interest. Apparently, there is this secret society where there are.
Hey, Bert, I got to stop you for a second. Hold on. I mean, I don't mean to be disrespectful. You sound like you've had a rough time of it. But if you went to the FBI and the U.S. attorney and told them that a federal agent had raped your wife and tortured you and it has something to do with a Tesla technology from space, you can see why maybe they're not taking you seriously. It has nothing to do with a secret society. It might be that just it sounds crazy to them. You know, that's why I'm asking you, what proof do you have that these events happen?
Well, they happen to my vice presidents, companies where I've worked. They happen to other people that I know.
Hey, Bert, I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's a fascinating story. You can send more to me online. You've obviously got my web address, and we're going to move on. Thank you for the call. Hope you're doing okay and your wife as well. We'll be right back with our last hour of Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. Stick around, everyone.